Zvihar Shmaises. And he was a young Rav in Auschwitz and answered many shailas. He wrote a sefer called Mekadeshei Hashem. And in there he brings tshuvas, various things, nothing to do with the Holocaust per se, from Gedolim who were killed in the Holocaust. That was his purpose. He put together a sefer of tshuvas of people that were killed, Mekadeshei Hashem. But in that sefer, he has a hakdama with a lot of stories of things that happened to him. And he says the following maisa. Okay. He says that there was a famous aktsia in Auschwitz where it was on Rosh Hashanah that they took 400 children, teenagers, children, and they were going to be sent to the gas chambers the second day of Rosh Hashanah. And one of the shilas they came to him with, which we're not going to discuss right now, but one of the shilas they came to him with, that Rosh Hashanah fell on Shabbos. And they wanted to know, since they knew for sure, pretty much, I mean, Derech HaTeva, they're not going to be alive the next day to hear shofar, would they be allowed to blow shofar on Shabbos to be Yotzei the Mitzvah from the Torah? Right, even though the Rabbanan Asher blowing shofar under the circumstances, since this was the last chance for them to hear shofar, you know, altogether, could they do it or not? That's at some point in the future, maybe we'll discuss that interesting shaila. In any case, what he says over here is the following. There were 400 boys that were separated, and they were going to be sent to the gas chambers. The way they picked these boys was the following. They didn't do it by age, they did it by height. Anybody, they had a stick, and anybody who went under the stick was sent to the gas chambers, because they figured he's young and not fit for forced labor. Anybody who was taller than the stick was put aside for forced labor, spared from gas chamber. So there was one of the boys, his name was Moshe Rosenberg, and he was about 20 years old, but he was short. So he went under the stick and he was sent to the group of 400 to be sent to the gas chambers. This boy, Moshe Rosenberg, was a masnid and a big Talmud Chacham. Even though he was a young man, he was 20 years old, but he had a name of being somebody very, very special. And he says that a young boy from my city, Weizen, came to me in the camp. And his name was Akiva Mann. And he said that he's very, very upset that this Moshe Rosenberg, who everybody knew was a fine Talmud Chacham, whatever, is being sent to the gas chambers. And he said that, so I said to him, the Meisel said, what can we do? Right. Our hands are tied. There's nothing we can do. He said, no, I know I can bribe one of the guards to let him go. So I have the wherewithal to bribe him, and I know a guard that will cooperate. So Rabbi Meisel said, but I told him, but you realize that the Germans are sticklers for numbers. And if they separate 400 people and they count 399, they're going to take somebody else to fill the quota. What are you going to do about that? He said, I have that planned out too. I'm going to take his place. I'm going to go with the 400. I'm going to bribe the guard and have him go out. I just want to know that I'm not committing suicide and lose my alma mater. I want you to pass it and it's okay for me to do it. That's where he came. This boy was about 16 year old. So Rabbi Meisel said, not allowed to do such a thing. He said that, what's the reason you're not allowed to kill somebody to save your life? Right? If somebody puts a gun to your head and says, kill him or I'll kill you, so you're not allowed to kill the other person. Why? Because my chazis, the domach, the doch, sumach tvei, right? Who says your blood is redder than his blood? Right? Somebody's going to have to die. Who said that your life is more important than the other person's? That you should save your life by killing somebody else? But the svar applies the opposite way too. who says his blood is more redder than my blood? So therefore, you don't do anything. You don't do anything positive to cause the death. You let it happen by itself. So if somebody puts a gun to your head and says, kill him or I'll kill you, you let yourself be killed. Can't actively kill somebody else to save yourself. On the other hand, the opposite is also true. Can't do anything actively to have yourself killed to save somebody else. Because who said? He said, although, he thought to himself, and so he yelled at the guy and he said, don't even think of such a thing, and he threw him out. And half an hour later, the guy came back. And he said, I can't just have no rest, right? I can't see this guy go to his death. Right, he's, what's it called, much more important than I am, and I'd be happy to sacrifice my life for him. The world needs him more than it needs me, and I would feel that my life, at least, I lost, the guy said, I lost my parents already, all my siblings, I'm alone in the world, right? At least let me make this contribution to save this other guy. And the Remizels again told him, I can't tell you, I can't pass on such a shiloh, what's it called, that it's okay for you to do such a thing. And in the end, I don't know, he doesn't say what happened in the end. But he did say that maybe there was something to what, he didn't tell the boy this, but the Gemara says that in a case of, you have a boat that's sinking, who do you save first? Okay, so some of you are not going to like this. First you save men, then women. First you save Kohanim, then Levim, right? First comes the Kohanim, then Levim, then regular Yisraelim. Adults come before children, and men come before women. It's almost the opposite of what the world thinks. You know, women and children first, right? So don't get on the frum boat if you're a woman or a child. Right, a Talmud Chacham becomes before a person who's not a Talmud Chacham. The reason being that the one who has more mitzvahs has nothing to do with the importance of men or women, but the one who has more mitzvahs adds to the world more, right? You can't judge the quality of people's mitzvahs, you can only judge the quantity. So whoever has the most mitzvahs gets saved first. So he said, based on that, maybe this boy was right, that if you know somebody has to be killed, maybe you give preference to save the bigger Talmud Chacham than less. But he said, but that's not really the case. Over there, the question is, who do you save? Here, the question is he allowed to sacrifice his life for somebody else? That, lechor, is not the case. That you can't do. Over there, we're saying, who do you have priority of saving? The other one's going to automatically die, but you're not doing anything to cause that person's death. You're just saving this person. So he didn't paskin for him, but you see, the godless, I mean, he's a 16-year-old, right, that had the courage to be, want to do this and the chokhmah to be able to say that, you know, this is going to be his contribution to the world. I don't know how many 16-year-olds today, you know, the circumstances we have would react like that. Sometimes tzaras bring out the best in people and mature them very, very quickly. And you hear stories, I mean, again, kids. There was a story that I saw of a child, by the name, a 9-10-year-old, who, what's it called, who risked his life, basically, to smuggle a siddur into one of the concentration camps so people could daven. And they caught him, and they beat him. And after the beating, he said he doesn't regret one bit, what's it called, all the hanoah that he got, that people were davening from that siddur, made the beating nothing. And we're talking some, you know, they patched him. So they beat him with a whip until he, what's it called, was almost unconscious and then bleeding. And this was a 9-10-year-old. So again, sometimes tzaras, you know, mature people way beyond their years, and sometimes the opposite is true. When people are mefunek and they're very pampered, they don't grow up till they're, you know, 30 or 40. So that doesn't mean that you should look for tzaras to, you know, make people better, but that's a side benefit from that. Okay, so that's the second thing. The next one is similar, a little bit different though. The next one is a person, so to be able to put yourself in place of someone else, right, is similar to suicide. Not exactly. That's a shaila that at least he wasn't in custody. Next shaila is a little bit more common. Are you allowed to put yourself in danger? You know, this shaila would be nogeya to the following case, which happened recently. Somebody throws a grenade, a bomb, and a soldier knows if he jumps on the grenade, he'll save the people around from the shrapnel, but he'll be definitely killed. If he doesn't, right, maybe he could run and maybe he'd be wounded, he wouldn't be killed. So the question is, are you allowed to do such a thing? The Chorus, the same Shaila, except that in that situation, I think their lives of all of them are in danger. So one person now is going to volunteer himself to die and save everybody else. That could be okay. There's a Gemara that says that two brothers did that. Lulainus and Potus, Haruge Lud. They found the king's daughter killed, and he accused the Jewish population. He killed out all the Jews of the city of Lud, unless somebody owned up to the crime. But nobody did it. No Yid killed the king's daughter. So there was nobody to own up to the crime. And the mayor of the whole city of Lud was going to be killed. So two brothers, Popus and Lulainus, admitted that they killed the girl. They didn't. But in order that they should be killed and save the whole city, they admitted it. And they're considered Kedoshim. Now there, it could be also. All of the city would have been killed, including them. So by them admitting it, they saved everybody else. They didn't change anything because they were going to be killed anyway. Not the question that they, you know, made themselves in place of that. However, the halacha is that if somebody, a goy comes and he says, give me one of you to kill or I'll kill all of you. So you're not allowed to give up somebody over. Unless the person's chayiv misa and they pointed to him. Right, somebody already is chayiv misa, like Sheva ben Dichri, the Gemara says, and the goyim said, give us him, or we'll kill you all. So since he's chayiv misa, and they picked him out, you're not picking out the person, then that person, you can give that person over. But if it's not that case, the person's not chayiv misa, or they didn't pick him out, then you can't pick somebody and say, but in that kind of situation, that person can volunteer. That, yes, the person himself can volunteer, but you can't give him over. Okay, but there's also the case where they're going to kill everybody, right, unless you give one person over. Right? Since the halacha is, again, you have no right to cause somebody's death. The goy will kill them or kill them. That's his business. But you have no right to be actively involved. But in the case where the person himself would not have been killed, and he's now volunteering himself in place of other people who would have been killed, that's not very clear whether you're allowed to do such a thing or not. Okay. The next situation is lesser. The next question was the following one. This question was asked not by Rabbi Meisel, but from... This is from Shuvas Mimamakim. This is from, what's his name? Rav, he was in Slabotka. His name was, his name slips my mind for a second, what's his name? Who wrote Shalas and Shuvas Mimamakim? Rav Oshri. I had the schus of meeting him. He lived in the east side, near where Moshe lived. And the svarim were very hard to get. So one year I was here already. I went to buy the svarim from him in his apartment. So I got to meet him and speak to him a little bit. Interesting to see the person who... he was, again, a young Rav in Slabotka, in Kovna, when the Kovna ghetto was liquidated. He survived. And he has a whole 5 volumes of tshuvas that people asked during the war, after the war, nogeya to these things, called Shlaz Mamakim, and it was a portion of them, a selection of them, was printed in English. I don't know if it's called a Response of the Holocaust or something like that. One volume in English with a lot of these shilas. So here's the Shaila that he had. I'll read it to you. I don't think he wrote these. I think he probably wrote them in Yiddish or whatever, and somebody who knew modern Hebrew translated them. This was the Shaila. Yom Tezayin El Tavshin Aleph, the 8th of September, 1941, Ba'al Lita HaMechabel HaYadua Shel Kama V'Kama Getos, Oberfuhrer Shel HaSS Geka, Shechiso B'Sofu Shel Dover Gamas Geto Kovna. Okay, on the 8th of September, 1941, so this SS officer came to Kovno Ghetto, and they knew that he was responsible for liquidating a lot of ghettos up until that point. So that was his specialty, and they realized that the end was near. Shmo ha-menuot shal Russia, Marusha, Germani zeh, holach lefonach kirotzeach, shoet dami madrego lishona, the Dover Bol Lita Ora Bahalogido Love and Kluya Ghetto. So people in the ghetto are obviously terrified, knowing that this guy had come to town. Kimiadla Bo Hosi Lahorig Mishpar Yehudim. First thing he did to put some fear into the people in the ghetto, he took some Jews out and shot them. Vaoznis Ora Shailas Akartisim Halavonim Shahoy Yudim Lashim Sabashem Yardin Shai. So the question like this. They gave out certificates for people who had professions that they would survive the liquidation of the ghetto because the Germans needed them for forced labor. So v'zeh ha-davar, ha-mefakid ha-germani yemach shemo al inyone ghetto kovna, yarden, nosen tzav lemuetzes haskenim shel ha-ghetto, ha-yadua v'kinoi elstenrot, she-aleihem nechlag bein bali, she-aleihem nechlag bein bali ha-maloch ha-nimtsoim b'ghetto, 5,000 karkisim b'vonim, she-mosu lahem, v'rak le-eila t'inosin ha-reshus li-shor b'ghetto, mishpecho-seyem, v'ha-yeser yuchsalu. They give out 5,000 of these certificates to be given out by the Council of Elders of the ghetto. The Germans always appointed a group of Jews to take care of the Vav Hanala of the ghetto. And they gave their orders through them. And many times these groups were very fine and functioned for the sake of the Yidden, and sometimes they were very selfish and functioned for their own sake or whatever. And it was a big shaila, what they could do. Many times, you know, if you didn't comply, then more people would suffer. And so they did comply with what the Nazis wanted, to buy time and to save at least who could be saved. In any case, they had the responsibility of giving out these 5,000 certificates. Ube'esahi nimtu begetik shloshim elef yehudim ube'neim kaseres alofim bali malachim. Right, they got 5,000 certificates, and everybody knew that if you got that certificate, at least your life was spared temporarily, because everybody else was going to be liquidated very quickly. And there were 30,000 Jews in the ghetto, amongst them 10,000 professionals. Now, professionals meaning people who were bali malacha. We're not talking about doctors and lawyers. We're talking about bali malacha that could benefit the Nazis' war effort. So you can imagine what went on. They knew there were 5,000. Who's going to get out of the 30,000? Who's going to get these 5,000 certificates? Aim with tires, hamahuma, vabahol, and the Nazis wanted that also. Right? They wanted to make this kind of mahuma between them, you know, and make the Jews, you know, like animals fighting over these certificates. Aim with tires, hamahuma, vabahol, shaports of the ghetto, bin bali hamalacha. So between the 10,000 Bali Malacha, there was a big fight. Who's going to get these certificates? It's not just the person who worked, his family also. He called Echad Mehem Rotzel Azakos Bekartis Lovan Kazeh B'yado Shim Lo Yizke Lahasi Kartis Kazeh Gorolo V'Gorol Mishpato Chasu. He didn't get that certificate, he's finished. So amongst 10,000 people who were eligible for it, there's big fights. Call Bali Hamalocha Shabigeto, Tsovu Bahamoneam Amuetsu Saskane, Bechde Liskos Bekartis Lovan. So they all gathered by the Muetsu Saskane in there, the town hall, and were clamoring for the certificates. Mehem chotfu kartisim v'kolach, and some grabbed these kartisim. They want to save their lives. They can't, you know, judge somebody. They didn't stand in line, you know, calmly or whatever. This, they knew that getting that white certificate meant life or death. So some people grabbed. And they grabbed white certificates to save themselves and save their family. B'yichud gavra ha-behala b'yom dalet chotei elu la'achar shenoda sh'agirmanin hekipu esagetam mikol tzadav u'v'chom l'vuosav. When it got closer to the liquidation on chotei elu, the Germans surrounded the ghetto with machine guns, and the people knew that this is it. And now they're already putting into practice the liquidation of the ghetto. Hufkadu mishmar shel chayolim misavi v'chomos hagetu umdu kanei mechonos yiria v'agirmoni imach shemom v'taldiseyim halitoyim umdu hachein kedai lasos herit b'yehudim. Surrounded the ghetto with machine guns. People knew that it's only a matter of days before the ghetto is going to actually be liquidated. Then it became much more lemaisa to have these certificates, because whoever had the certificates were going to be taken out of the ghetto and saved. Kimokei noda shebegetto akotin partsu germanim mizuyonim atol bote ayhudim girshu also machutza b'chamas retzach b'kinsu also b'migrash b'shuk v'asu shom miyun shel ayhudim eile shayu lehem kartisim levonim hu amdu mishpachoseyem lahod lechud ve'eile shelo hayu lehem kartisim ke'eile hu amdu mishpachoseyem lechud. They also knew that the Germans meant business, because in the smaller ghetto, there were two ghettos in Kovka, one big one and one smaller one. In the smaller ghetto, they already, the Germans first liquidated that ghetto. And what they did is, they went, and anybody who had one of these white cards, one of these white certificates, was put separate with his family, and the ones who didn't were put separate. And they knew that the Germans meant business. If you had the white certificate, you were going to be saved. It wasn't just, you know, pipe dreams. And if you didn't have it, that was it. So they came to ask the Shaila. It amazes me that in this kind of situation, people are still asking Shailas. Right? But they came to ask him a Shaila. Ha'im mutter l'mwetzus ha'skenim shel ha'geto l'kaches es ha'kartisim l'chalkom k'ti atzav sh'nosu lehem tzor yehudi zeh yardei ki alo b'chol kartis she'im l'chalkim le'echad nibali ha'malocha hingdochin ba'al malocha acher mosu mosu l'malchus harish ha'germonis yimach shemam sh'yasu bo kritzona. First of all, the one question was this council allowed to give out these white certificates? Because whoever they gave it to means that somebody else was going to go to be killed. So by giving it to this person, they were taking away life from somebody else. That's one question. The Imkain named Dokin Bezen Nefesh and the Nefesh. They were choosing who's going to live and who's going to die. Did they have the right to do that? Who said that the one they gave the certificate to was more important than the one that they didn't give it to? So could they make that decision? Another question. The people who were grabbing these white certificates, were they doing the right thing? Because they also were, if you got it, that means somebody else didn't get it. So you basically were saving yourself at somebody else's expense. Ki halo b'zeshin chotin l'atzman, yardin shayin, hein dokin nefesh yehudi acher, u'molim es hatzolosim, halotzis hatzolos mishpachto. Same thing. Who says you're allowed to actively save yourself at the expense of somebody else? That was the shayin. Okay. What would you say is the halacha in such a case? Anybody want to venture a... What would you say if somebody asked you that shayin? So he says like this.
First one or the second one?
Either one.
There was a case in the government that talks about you walk in a desert and you have enough water to save yourself and to another person with you, and you save yourself and you don't get the water with somebody.
But that's where you had the water to begin with. But you can't grab the water for somebody else who had the water first.
The you didn't grab it from him. You didn't take it away from him. It was there. You got it first.
He says like this. He says mutter. So first of all, we're not talking over here about causing somebody else's death at your expense. Or what we're talking about is the council, first of all, had to give out these 5,000 certificates. They're not causing anybody to die. They didn't give out an insurance certificate, everybody's going to die. What they're doing is giving 5,000 people the ability to live. They're not causing the other ones to die. It's not like, we're going to kill you all unless somebody, you know, volunteers. It's not, that's not the question. They're all going to kill whoever has the white certificate to live. You're allowed to give out something to save somebody's life. Here it was totally life-saving. The other people who were going to die had nothing to do. They just didn't get the thing. But it wasn't this one or this one, and they chose which one. They're allowed to give it out. That's what he said. Secondly, he said, if somebody grabs it from somebody else who had it, that's recious. That's for sure not. I'm saving my life, and I'm causing somebody else to die. That's also. They weren't grabbing it from other people. They were grabbing it from the council that they should be the ones to get it. He said, that's a person has a right to do such a thing. There's a right to grab it. Who said that the council has the right to make the decision? I can make the decision, too. Right? Again, I'm not causing somebody else to die. I'm just guaranteeing that the person who grabbed it can live. In that situation, he said, both things were mutter. It was mutter for them to give it out, and it was mutter for people, if they could, grab it, if you can, right? As long as you don't grab it from somebody who already got it. That's a different story. Okay, so that's the next. The next shaila is a little bit different. And that is the following. Here we're not talking about somebody either volunteering themselves in place of somebody else or trying to save their life at the expense of somebody else, but somebody putting their life in danger for the sake of somebody else. Okay? It's interesting. I should leave the shaila. The Yomim Arishon with Nisus HaGermanim Lit is also from Rav Oshri. The Kav Ches Sivan Tavshin Aleph. This was before the other Maisa. Miyad Kishidorchu Ragleyev HaTmeyos Al Admosam. When the Germans entered Lithuania, it was already in the summer of Tavshin Aleph. And Hei Mechelu L'Haros HaZachzer Yusim HaGdola Klapei HaYehudim B'chom Maisi Resha V'Zodom. So that the help of the Lithuanians were worse than the Germans. As soon as the Germans came, the Lithuanians went hefker. And they killed Jews just arbitrarily. So what happened was, as soon as the Germans came into Lithuania, mideyom biyomo hen hischilu varoch tzayad onem berchobos kofna. They would capture Jews, kidnap them, in the middle of the street. Sadu b'chotfu Yehudim, anoshim v'noshim, men and women, b'sholchu osam l'mitzer ashvi b'mokum shenikba gorola. And they were sent to the seventh fort. There were all these forts, if you're ever in Lithuania, in these places, they're still there. This is where Ruchanan was killed. There are forts that were set up to protect that area. And they sent the Jews to the what was called the seventh fort, and there, many of them were killed. The Lithuanians were terrible anti-Semites, and they saw it as a tremendous schuss that the Germans gave them permission to do whatever they want with Jews. They always wanted to do that. Now they had the permission of the Germans to do what they wanted. And whoever was more successful in causing tzoris for the Yidden became more respected by the Germans and became a bigger shot. Right, Gemara says that. It's partially for our benefit. That we shouldn't be persecuted by lowlifes, we should be persecuted by important people. Right. So Hayu Ben Ali Toyim Kaila should stand up a nice Azurusam, Rishosam, Klape Yahudim, Biyihu, Kishiratu Limsu, Ayadei Kachain, Bene Adonai Magermoni. So a lot of Lithuanians wanted to find favor in the eyes of the Germans and be elevated because of that. So they were mitstayen in being cruel to Yid. Finally, the Germans made them the overseers for this whole idea of capturing and kidnapping Jews and sending them to the death. They knew that the Lithuanians would do their job faithfully. V'achein hirbu alitoyim ha'il lasu soros la'yehudim v'lig'olish yadehem v'shol v'retzach v'midol v'chusam ha'germonim. And there the Lithuanians did more or as much as what the Germans did. Meos Yehudim nechtefu b'yom ha'im. Hundreds of Jews were captured, were kidnapped. Right, al yadehem b'rechovos, right on the street. You walk in the street, all of a sudden they took you and sent you away. Sometimes they came into the house, took Jews out of the house. And here's we're getting closer to the Shaila. Some of the yeshiva bachrim from the yeshiva in Kovna were also taken to this seventh fort and held there. He was in Kovna. He was one of the big Bali Musar. Menahel Yeshiva Slabotka. He was the Menahel of Slabotka. She'elech El Reb David Itzkovitz, Hashem Yimkavdomo. Obviously, he was killed by the Germans eventually. She'hoye Masker Agudas Rabbanim. This Rav David Itzkovitz was the secretary of the Agudas Rabbanim. So he was an influential person. It's like Moshe Scherer, you know, in America. In that area, he was a very influential person. And he should go to the Lithuanians, who were in charge of the captured Jews, including these yeshiva bachrim. He was on good terms with these Lithuanians before the war, so he had connections with them. So he may be able to, use his connections to free the bachrim of the yeshiva. Rav Gozinski was responsible for these boys. So he wanted to get them freed. She established etzlam. She shachrus bnei yeshiva. She nechtu for yodim. The also the finding of shaila. So that's what Rav Avram Grozinski asked me to convince this Rav David Itzkowitz to go to the Lithuanians and see if they could arrange that the yeshiva bachrim would be freed. So shaila came up: is it mutter for him to go or not? Why? He's going to lion's den, right? Who said they're going to let him go? They'll laugh him in the face, they'll keep him there too, and he's going to put himself into danger. Right? Is somebody allowed to put themselves in danger? Here again, it's not the same before, where you are definitely putting yourself to be killed in place of somebody else. You may not be killed, but you're putting yourself in danger to try and save somebody else. If you don't do anything, the other person is probably going to be killed. If you do something, you may well both be killed. But on the other hand, you may be able to save the person. Are you allowed to do that or not? The Shaila is not only in this case, I was in a more normal case. Somebody's drowning, okay? And you know how to swim, but the currents are very strong. If you jump in, it's happened many times, to try to save the other person, both of you may die. Or a building's burning. Somebody's trapped in a burning building. If you run into the burning building, you're putting your life in danger. You may save the other person, you may not, right? If you don't do anything, the other person, apiteva, is going to for surely get burnt or drown. If you do something, there's a chance that you'll save him. There's also a chance that you'll both die. Are you allowed to do something or not? There's a mitzvah in the Torah of lo samal adam riecha. You see somebody in danger, you can't stand by idly, you have to do something to save him. Where does that apply? So basically, and this is what he says in the tshuva, the halacha is like this. If the other person's life is in great danger, in other words, the chances of that person surviving the burning building, the drowning, are 10%. 90%, if nothing happens, the guy's going to die. And you're a good swimmer, right? And the guy has no courage. The guy had a cramp. And the chances of something happening to you are 10%. The chances of you being able to save him and yourself, right, and nothing's going to happen to you is 90%. Then it's clear you have to do it. You have to take a small risk to save somebody else from a very big risk. That's for sure. That's where the halacha of Osama al-Dam Riecha applies. What happens, though, if the risk to you is 50%? The currents are very strong. The building is burning. The chances that anybody walks in that building and will come out, right, is 50%. And that person's life is 90%, right? If he stays there, it's 90% he's going to die, 10% that he maybe survive with a mace. If you run into the building, chances are 50% you won't make it out, 50% you will. It's really a great risk. It's not a small risk. Then the halacha is that you're not mechuyev to do it, but you're allowed to do it if you so volunteer, but you don't have to. You don't have to put your life at big risk to save somebody else from a bigger risk. You only have to put your life at small risk. How exactly you figure out what the risk is not so clear, but there's people around who, you know, will say what the chances are. On the other hand, if the risk for you is also 90%, 90% you're not going to make it. And he's not going to make it. But if you go in, there's a 10% chance that, you know, you'll be able to save him, then it could be it's usher for you to do that, as long as you're committing suicide. Then there's no tachlis to do something where the risk is so great that the chances of saving him are very small and the chances that you're going to die are very great, there could be you're not even allowed to do it. So there's three levels. Level where the risk is small and the risk to him is great, it's a mitzvah to do it. Where the risk is even, per se, you don't have to do it, but you're allowed. Where the risk is so great to you, it could be you're not even allowed to do it. Clear, but the pashas, you're not even allowed to do it. So he said over here, Lemaisa, in this kind of situation, he said nobody can say that he has to do it. Nobody can tell this with David Itzkowitz, you have to go and try to save these yeshiva bachurim. Because it's obviously, it may not be a 90% risk because he had good connections, but it was at least a 50% risk. So chiyuv he doesn't have. That he was allowed to do it if he wanted to, right? There they said that if he wanted to, he could do it. It wasn't usher for him to do it. Because of his connections or whatever, it was the chances of him getting out with the yeshiva bachurim, or at least alone, were enough that wasn't mamash just committing suicide. And the Maisa says he did go, and he think he did get the yeshiva bachurim, released. But he chose to go, but it was his choice. Well, that's not something that that you could mechayev him to do. Okay. One other Shaila was, were you allowed, I think that we'll leave this till 2 weeks from now, because again, I can just tell you what the Shaila was in general, but it's kedai to hear the Shaila because it really tells you a lot about the situation and what situation people were in and why they didn't, it wasn't so simple, you know, just to resist. The Shaila is, the general Shaila is somebody allowed to go out of the city, join the partisans to fight the Nazis? Where his life may be more in danger, are you allowed to put your life in danger to fight the Nazis? Or should you stay relatively safer with your family than putting your life in danger by fighting against the Nazis? But the way the Shaila is put is much more in detail. What the dangers were in the city, what the dangers were outside, what the differences are, and why, in fact, it wasn't so simple, everybody just went and did it, right, to resist. Because the dangers and the reasons not to do it were very logical reasons too. So Nitzashim, next time we'll start with that Shaila, and then we'll see what the sock was.